With roughly 3 weeks remaining between now and the start of the NFL draft, it's time to dig into some more prospects, and we will be doing so today with Emery Hunt of Football Game Plan, CBS Sports. It'll be myself and Dylan Terriman, Jet Nation Radio, Jet Nation Live. Be sure to log into jetnation.com where you can register and become a part of what is the most active Jets message board on the web. Dylan, how are we doing tonight?
Good. We're officially in draft month, like you said, 3 weeks away. I love to start every podcast with like how many days or weeks away from the draft are we? Because we're itching to get there.
Very much so.
On tonight, we're going to ask him a lot of draft related questions, and I think some of his answers are going to leave people expecting one answer and possibly getting another, because Emery goes very against the grain with his rankings and the way he sees things, which is a great thing because he never falls into that echo chamber. So it's good to have his opinion, and it's always nice when he comes on the podcast.
Yeah, always love having him on. And I feel like given the depth of the tackle and receiver spots in this class and how we're assuming the Jets are going to address both of those positions early on, I feel like we could do 2 hours just talking about tackles and or receivers. I'm looking at his list and I'm at like his 35th ranked tackle. And I'm like, oh, I like that guy. There's some names in this class. Obviously the Jets are going to end up with somebody. We'll see who it is. We'll see if it's in the top 10, if it's in the top 100, wherever it is. But I got to say, and I mention this every year, and I feel like I've run into a lot of it again this week. A lot of folks just act like the Jets only have one pick. And when you suggest they use a pick on a guy they don't like, they're like, oh, great. So we're just not going to have a tackle this year, huh? We're just going to leave tackle where it is. We got these old injury prone guys and we're going to take a receiver or a tight end and not have a tackle. And it's like, there's more picks after that. There's seven different rounds. Granted, the Jets don't have a pick in every round, but they could trade down. They could trade picks from the following year into this year and get more picks. So there's more than one. The draft doesn't end after that first pick. I know that's the most exciting one. It gets the headlines. It's what everybody talks about. It's been funny in years past, Dylan. I've written articles about guys who are like literally day three guys. And I don't feel like I have to say that. Like, I'll write an article on a prospect who's literally like a day three, maybe even a UDFA type. And I'm like, well, I don't have to specify that this guy will be a late round pick. This is just a player I think they should be looking at. Mm-hmm. And people are literally, oh my God, we're going to take this guy and we need a quarterback and we're going to draft this guy. And I'm like,
right.
Do these people think I'm recommending that this 348th ranked player should be the pick at 9 or 8?
Right. Like,
not everyone is going to be the first round pick. And there are more than one. It drives me nuts every year. And I've had, because I've been so much on the Bowers train, I've had these people like, oh, great. No tackle then. Not going to address tackle. Like, mm-hmm. I've literally said a million times, there are guys out there now, and I want to talk about this tonight. There are guys out there right now that I'm like, why aren't the Jets signing that guy? That is a quality, capable veteran tackle that would give this team a lot more depth. Why aren't they getting him now? I've done the Roger Rosengarten profile. I've talked about guys they could take with that 72nd pick, you know, quality, capable tackles. But it's not the 10th pick, so it doesn't count. Doesn't matter. Why are we talking about anyone outside the 10th pick? It's crazy. Absolute craziness. Wild wave. How we doing, buddy?
Yeah. And I think it's gotten to the point where Jets Twitter seems to do this every single year, at least probably since the Zach Wilson draft. So this is probably the third or fourth draft in a row where we've just argued so much about one specific pick all offseason long that it's tiring. Like, I put out a tweet last week and it said, we take an offensive lineman at 10, that's great. If we take a wide receiver at 10, like, that's fancy. If we take Brock Bowers, like, we're going to have fun. Like, we need to stop arguing about it. Let's talk about 72. Let's talk about 111, 134, those picks, because that's where the draft is going to be made. Like, you can't just sit there, even if they pick right at 10. Jets fans are going to say, oh, the draft is over. We didn't address this position entering Friday. You're just going to hear it all on Twitter.
Guaranteed. Anyone who doesn't get the position they want.
Yes.
If it's tackle, like, and this is just the way I feel with tackle, I'm just, and not even, You know, at first I was kind of like, well, I'll just be confused because that's not a win now move. That's a win later move, especially if you, again, take the approach I'm saying, which is sign one of the veterans who are out there right now as your backup. But I'm still adamant that this, and I've heard a few people say it. I heard someone say it the other day. And you know, let's be honest, we all like a little confirmation bias. We all want a respected person in the industry to say something that we've been parroting. And I just keep saying, like, this has to be a starter. You can't draft a backup. And then there's the whole aspect, which we haven't even really talked about. Listen, no matter who you like in this class, no matter who you want at 10, for every single player, I want Brock Bowers, you want Fatana, whoever we want, there is a bust risk for everyone. Yes. Nobody is a lock to make it. Yep. So let's talk about that for a second. That, to me, makes me want Bowers even more. Because if you're telling me, again, looking at the players equally, let's say it's Fatanu, who I like. Let's say they take Fatanu, and he's a bust. And you know, everyone's nightmare scenario, you know, Tyron Smith is going to be hurt week three, and they're going to need this rookie to play 13 games. Mm-hmm. All right, if you have a bad left tackle for 13 games, you're kind of screwed. Oh, yeah. Even if he's good, even if he needs 8-10 weeks to settle in, you take Brock Bowers and he's a bust. Like, Bowers is a guy who makes you go from a potentially very good offense to a potentially great offense. Mm-hmm. If you take him and he's a bust, you can still survive. You can still score 21, 24 points a game, which should be enough with this defense. So the risk of the guy being a bust. And then someone said to me, well, that's where you can have, you know, a veteran step in and play left tackle if the rookie is struggling. You know, if Smith gets hurt. Mm-hmm. I'm like, so now you're talking about pick 10 on a third stringer. Like how far down the depth chart? Yes, like, oh, if we add a few guys ahead of him, then that left tackle is fifth on the depth chart, so we're safe. All right, so let's use pick 10 on the fifth string guy. You know what I mean? So again, everyone carries risk, and that's one of the. And I think I mentioned this last week, right? Because we're all expecting the player they get at 10 to be good, but I've seen a lot of people say we know the player at pick 10 will be good. I'm like, well, we don't know that at all, and we won't know that for a few years.
Yeah, and I feel like the Jets, specifically talking about offensive tackle, like, they're in a position where if they do take one of those, not only do they have to be good, but the expectation from the team or from the fan base is going to be, like, to use a basketball term, they need to win sixth man of the year. Like, they need to be the best person off the bench in case there's an injury. Like, they need to come in and hit the ground running. So overall, when you look at the 10th overall pick, you need to find somebody with the highest floor. And there, that's when you start talking about Brock Bowers. Obviously, somebody put in the chat, J.E. says Neighbors is a lock. I would consider him one of those high floor players. He's not going to be there at 10, obviously. And there's and then Marvin Harrison Jr. is another one of those high floor players. So when you're looking at realistic candidates at 10, I hope they don't swing for a, well, we hope we can make him what he's supposed to be type of player, whereas they want a guy who will hit the ground running, that won't miss a step if there is an injury and he has to play. So yeah, that would be me leaning towards like a Brock Bowers or even a Roma Dumze is like kind of in that range for me. He's my third wide receiver, and I think there's a bit of a gap between him and Neighbors, but you need somebody with a high floor as in terms or instead of a high ceiling. Like Fashanu, I think he's got a higher floor than Fatanu, but the ceiling on Fatanu is probably a little bit higher. So I like him in the trade down scenario, but if they took Olu at 10, hell yeah, I'm cool. His pass protection floor makes me feel comfortable with Rodgers and Breece Hall. I mean, he can run behind any offensive line. He's kind of proven that. So
yeah, I was gonna say
The high floor versus high ceiling debate really comes into play at 10, and then you can get tricky with the rest of the draft and go for projection or whatever, maybe a long-term pick or a future starter who's going to take over for somebody on an expiring contract. So there's ways to do it, but I think high floor is the way at 10.
Yeah, and Johnny Football, a few things in the chat here. Johnny Football, this is when we started talking draft, you, me, and Chris Schubert, who's not with us tonight. He will be back next week. This is the exact scenario I pitched, was grab Bowers, then trade next year's one and a pick this year to get back into the first round and grab a tackle. I would do that in a heartbeat, Johnny Football. That was my position. And I've said, again, this is another one of those things where people kind of freaked out, but I am 99.99999% of the time, 1,000,000% against trading future picks, especially a future first. This year is the exception. This is the treat Aaron Rodgers, treat every year of Aaron Rodgers like it's the last year you have Aaron Rodgers. Don't talk to me about what you might get out of him and a draft pick next year. We don't know what we're getting out of him this year. We're all assuming and hoping like hell we're going to get, at the very worst, very good quarterback play. But the following year could be retirement. It could be a significant drop-off as he gets a year older. We don't know. So load up while you've got him. I'd be 100% on board with Bowers and then finding a way to get another one this year. J.E. says we need another wide receiver, a threat with yak ability and speed. Listen, I wouldn't mind a guy like Neighbors. I wouldn't mind Odunze, but when you're talking about yards after the catch, nobody in this class had a higher yards after catch in terms of pass catchers than Brock Bowers. And then, of course, there is Malachi Corley, who we've talked about a fair bit, Dylan, who knows where the – and that's the other part of this, right? You can look at mock drafts from the insiders, prognosticators, and Malachi Corley is going to the 49ers in the first round in one draft, and then he's going in the middle of the third round in another draft. It's all what teams like, what they're looking for, what's on the board when they're on the clock. Let's see. The dude says he wants a pass catcher at 10. Listen, quite a few of us feel that way. We think that pass catcher is the way to go. Mm-hmm. And this is the class to want run, right? This is the class where you can get a pass catcher a lot later than you could in previous years. But that is becoming the norm because, a lot of it seems the young players, the young dynamic athletes, these guys are playing wide receiver. And every year we're seeing these deep, deep classes. I pointed out a few years ago when Eric DaCosta said, teams are going to be finding starting receivers in the fifth round this year. And that was a few years back, and he was right. And that could be the case again this year. But joining us now, we have from Football Game Plan, from CBS Sports, NFL draft aficionado, Emery Hunt. Emery, thanks for joining us. How you doing, man?
I'm doing fine, guys. I appreciate y'all having me on.
Always a pleasure. Emery's been kind enough to give us some of his time for, five, 6 years now running, I think. And it's always appreciated, Emery, because I know you got, you're wearing a million hats and you're on between podcasts and TV shows. Love when you're on CBS with Ryan and Rick Spielman. I'm a regular listener. Love when you guys get into it. So prospects this year, overall, I mentioned at the top, Jets fans, we're sort of hyper-focused on receiver and tackle because we expect the Jets to address both of those spots quite likely early on. Touch on some of the big names that everyone talks about, like who are your top three tackles, who are your top three receivers, and then we'll pepper you with a few questions on prospects we like.
Well, it's interesting because this is the class to like receivers and also tackles. So when you look at offensive tackle, I think you can't go wrong with like seven different guys because I feel like the drop-off starts around tackle number seven. So you're talking about Fortano, who's my number one. You're also looking at Joel Oat. You're also looking at the kid out of Oregon, Seifuaga. Fashanu is another one. Those are my top four right there. And those dudes are legit studs. I know people may say Fortano is a guard, but if I watch you excel at tackle at the Power 5 level in the Pac-12 against those pass rushers you've seen from UCLA, from USC, from what you get from a run defense perspective up there at Oregon State, from the defensive versatility from those guys at Oregon, I think you could play tackle at the National Football League level. So I'm not worried about him. Until he proves otherwise, leave him at tackle and let him ball out at tackle. If you're looking for an offensive lineman, there's a bunch of those guys there, a tackle in regards to that position. At receiver, you're talking about, I break them down from different positions. So you're thinking about X receivers, Z receivers, slot receivers. These guys like Malik Neighbors. Obviously, you talk about Rome Odunze, and you're looking at a slot guy. That's what I have for Ladd McConkey. Those are my three number ones at their respective positions. But then after that, you're looking at A.D. Mitchell. You're looking at Keon Coleman. You're looking at Marvin Harrison Jr. These are some guys that can really step in and be starters. Burton from Alabama. So this is a really good class. It all depends on who's going to start the run on receivers. Is it going to be pick four, pick five, maybe the Giants at pick six? But this is definitely a healthy class for it.
So of all those names that you just listed, is there one or two that stick out to you that might be like a good fit for the Jets at 10 there? Because I know that seems to be the hot debate on Jets Twitter is who to take at 10. Do you have one or two guys from those position groups that you would key in on?
Well, I feel like the Jets need a bona fide X receiver. I feel like Wilson can be someone that you kind of move around on game day. So you get someone that you can really count on down and down out to beat press coverage, to win versus a team's number one corner. I feel like that's Rome Odunze or Malik Nabers. So you can't go wrong with either one, but I like Odunze in that X role. I think that's the type of guy you kind of want, but Nabers is someone that can score from anywhere on the field. If you look at how Nabers plays, and think about how OBJ was when he was with the Giants, that's the same type of explosiveness. That's the same type of game breaking ability. And there's no downside in having guys that can catch a short pass and take it a long way. I wouldn't even rule out, and no one's brought this up, but I wouldn't rule out quarterback. If someone drops to the Jets, they have to get younger. They have to plan for the future. And quarterback is a sneaky pick right there for them at pick number 10.
Yeah, you know, I've said, and Dylan and I just spoke about it before you came on, Emery, that I really feel like this pick 10 has to be a guy that contributes right away because they have a small window with Rodgers. And I've said it won't be a quarterback, but in that same breath, when I see people saying that Drake May could fall to 10, like I've been a Drake May guy, you know, one of many people who thought he was going to be a top 3 or 4 pick since last season, since watching, you know, when he first came on the scene at UNC. If he falls to 10, it's one of those things where I'd be shocked if they took him, but I mean, having Drake May to learn under Aaron Rodgers wouldn't exactly upset me. The philosophy of not getting an immediate guy would shock me. But one player I wanted to ask you about, Emery, because I think I saw you mention him on Twitter, and you know, with the All 22, we're able to access. We have a fairly decent library that we can get to look at prospects. But one guy I haven't been able to look at, and you talked about him and you ranked him fairly high, which I really liked. Yale offensive tackle, Kieran, is it Amagaji? I'm not even sure how to pronounce it. I think it's Kieran Amagaji. The little bit I was able to find, I was really impressed. But I thought, this is a guy I got to ask Emery about, you know, because you've probably got the resources, probably seen more of him than we have. Tell us about this guy as if, because I would guarantee you 99% of our viewers have never watched him play.
He was fantastic. And, you know, from a footwork perspective, I liked it. From his, you know, ability to really, we call it playing the piano, where you're able to pass guys off. Hand fight would have been pass guys off to the next guy in terms of stunts and twists. He can handle those well. The game I tell people to go watch is the Morgan State game, because Morgan State has a dude next year that's going to get drafted in Elijah Williams, who wears number 0. He is a terror. And they have a guy this year that's going to be in the NFL camp in Noah Washington, who's 6'4", 275, can play up and down the front and also stand up in edge rush too. So he was getting some good reps in that game against those two guys and was winning consistently. So I'm not worried about him versus, you know, a bull rush. I'm not worried about him versus Twitch, because I feel like he can handle both. I kind of wish he was able to participate in the All-Star game circuit, but he was nursing the injury. So that's why a lot of people are not talking about him. But you go and watch his tape, and you're watching, you got to watch the right games. Like I said, you go watch that game against Morgan State. You're seeing him versus top-notch athleticism and guys that's going to be playing on Sundays, and he handled himself very well.
Yeah, so just following up on the offensive line talk, two guys that were at the Senior Bowl, I feel like the Jets might not be in the realm to pick them, maybe because of their play in Mobile specifically, but Christian Jones, the tackle from Texas, and Christian Haynes, the guard, I guess, slash center, slash kind of do-it-all player from UConn. Do you think those guys have kind of propelled themselves out of the round 3 range? Do you think the Jets could possibly get them at 72? It seems like the consensus on mock draft simulators is they're gone at 72, or maybe one is there. So do you think they've kind of played themselves out of the Jets range, or are they comfortable round 3 guys?
Well, you never really know what the draft is going to do. And I wouldn't put too much stock in those mock draft simulators, because they tend to be, you know, out of whack. They're just fun for people to, you know, it's almost like playing Candy Crush, right? It's just something you could do to pass the time, right? But in terms of the real draft, like, you never know, because again, we may see a run on whoever takes the first tackle. I feel like 6 tackles will go next, right? And so that pushes everybody up. Or whoever takes the first receiver, 6 receivers is going to go next, and that pushes elite tackle prospects and other positions down. So you never really know. And you hope that the team that selects these guys or have done the work on these guys have put in enough time and effort to say, hey, we understand where these guys are going to be valued. We understand what we want. And if we feel like because of a run on a position, we may have to take them around earlier, then so be it. You want to make sure you get your guy. So I feel like the draft at this juncture is so difficult to predict outside of the top five, especially when you're dealing with an elite position this year in receiver and also tackle.
Now, I was looking, and I was going to, of course, pass this along, Emery. Emery, every year, puts out the most in-depth draft guide on the market. You're not going to find a draft guide that profiles more players than what Emery does. I get it every year. Picked mine up a few days ago. Was thumbing through it. Well, I guess scrolling, right? It's the digital copy only. But I was looking through it, and one thing that jumped out at me was the fact that, and I know these guys move around, and we don't know where they're exactly where they'll play in the pros. But a guy who I really love in this class, Graham Barton, you had him listed as a tackle, where the consensus is he is not going to be a tackle in the league. Are you listing that because it was his college position, or are you suggesting that's where you would look at him before you move him, or where do you stand on Barton? Because I think he's a fantastic player.
I always look at guys where they're playing as opposed to trying to predict and move guys. I don't know why folks want to move every tackle to guard. Like, just let guys play their position until they play themselves out that position. And so, you're talking about someone that played tackle in the ACC against Clemson, against Florida State, you know, against all of these athletic edge guys, right? So he's gotten the reps, the time on task. Let's see him at tackle if that doesn't work. Because you're asking guys to – we see how much the difference is for players to move from left tackle to right tackle, the adjustments, the footsteps, to getting used to the different body movements. Now imagine that moving inside the guard. It takes time. Because then you'll be mad at the guy for not really thriving at guard because you moved him to guard, right? So I feel like you let guys play their positions. You grade them at the position that they excelled at. And then if they get to the league, that's completely different. Because here's the thing. That's why there are college scouts, and that's why there are pro scouts. So now you have – because it's two different things that you're doing. Let me grade the tape that you put out there, and we bring you in. We like the talent at this position. And then we'll see if you have crossover ability. Now, sometimes you'll be able to see that when you're grading guys. Okay, this guy potentially can play, you know, tackle or guard, or if they have it on film, right? You go back and watch, like Alabama is notorious for this, having guys cross-train across the board throughout their career. You'll see guys start games at different positions along the offensive line. So you have a good amount of tape to say, okay, I've seen him play at guard. I've seen him play at center. I've seen him play at tackle, and now you can project moving forward.
So just more in the day three range, because I know these are the positions that the Jets still typically are viewed as consensus needs. Running back and safety, starting with the running backs, Isaac Garendo from Louisville, he had an explosive combine, 4.3, 3.40, 41.5 in the vert, 10.75 in the broad. At 6 foot 221. So, like, I know they always want to say thunder and lightning in the backfield, and I feel like the Jets are already blessed with a thunder slash lightning back in Breece Hall already. Should the Jets just attack that type of approach again and pair up Garendo with Breece Hall and just have a thunder type of combination in the backfield? Or who are some other day three names if they don't go out and sign a veteran that you think would complement what they currently have in the backfield?
Well, there's two schools of thought, and I like that you brought up Garendo because he had a really good East-West Shrine Bowl, and he reminds me a lot of Michael Turner. You know, he's 220, and if he gets a lane, he's explosive. He just like Breece Hall, he'll burst right through it and can house it. And he also has experience as a kickoff returner, just like Michael Turner did. And we know Michael Turner started off as an RB2 in San Diego before elevating himself to RB1 status and then getting an opportunity with the Falcons and being their starter, right? But if you're looking at want to recreate the Breece Hall, Michael Carter scenario, you got someone local, you know, right down on the Jersey Shore in Jaden Sherton, who is super explosive. Now, I called 11 of his games throughout the course of his collegiate career, and this dude is always one carry away from breaking an 80-yard run. And if the best thing for him this year or this past season was Keaton Mitchell's rise. So now people will look at Jaden Sherton and not just knock him because he's 5'7", not knock him because, you know, they may see him as 195, right? They'll look at his speed and explosiveness and what he put out there on tape at Monmouth and say, hey, you know what? This is someone that can help us out, that can spell a Breece Hall, because he was used to carrying, he was a bell cow at Monmouth. You saw him get 20 carries, 25 carries a game, and finish with like 240 something yards rushing. So this dude is insane with his explosiveness, his first step quickness. And I do feel like if they want to go a different size back as opposed to Guerrero, then you have someone right there in Sheridan that definitely fits that mold.
Now, looking at, talking about late round backs, there's a guy I talked to Dylan about him before we went live, because I like that you had him a lot higher in your draft guide than I think a lot of people do. He's a guy that honestly fell off my radar a little this year because he wasn't as productive. And then I saw his name a few weeks ago and I was like, oh, I really liked that guy last year. Let me go back and watch. And I think looking at some of his quarterback play, I think that's why his production wasn't that really good. But LaDaitre Griffin from Mississippi State, wide receiver, ran in the 4.4s. I think that in a better situation, he would have been a lot more productive. And I look at receiver for the Jets, I think, at the spot where they may double dip, especially with one of those, day three comp picks. They might grab a guy, and he's somebody who is projected as a day three guy. Share your thoughts on Griffin a little bit. And, is he a type of guy that I'm assuming you view him as a day three guy based on, where this class is in terms of talent.
And here's the thing. Again, he was another one that really was just wowing at the East-West Shrine Bowl, where, and I'm talking about not in one-on-ones, because receivers versus DBs in one-on-ones is just heavily slanted toward the offense. They're going to win those and wow in those. I'm talking about 7-on-7, talking about a team period, and he was killing it, man. And you saw his speed and explosiveness, show itself throughout his route running. The problem is, you got to hold your breath, because he has drops. And, that's not what you want to hear when you're talking about receiver, and especially you see it a lot with some of these fast guys. They tend to look upfield before they secure the football. Doesn't have the biggest of hands. So anytime you get a little bit of contact while you're trying to catch the ball, you're going to drop it. Or you have some of these, what we call concentration drops. His hands are inconsistent, but he didn't drop anything during the Shrine Bowl. So that's a plus. But that's the only knock for him, which is probably why he's slated to go on day three.
Muted myself. So sticking with the day three conversation, I know the Jets have most of their picks in day three with only a first, a third, two fourths, I think a sixth and two sevenths. Safety is another position. I think they need to replace Jordan Whitehead. Obviously, they could still re-sign Ashton Davis, but just a couple names I'll throw at you, and you can give me your thoughts on those or others in that range. Keaton Oladipo, Tyler Owens, Jalen Simpson, Evan Williams. Any of those do you think could be in that range, or other names that you want to throw out there at safety that the Jets could be looking at?
Yeah, listen, Simpson was a good player to grade on film. And all these guys, I tweeted this out the other day, I felt like this was a really good safety class. I feel like it's getting some bad publicity. People look at, I don't know what people be looking at sometimes where they'll, if they don't see Ed Reed, oh, this is a bad safety class. Like, nah, these are good football players, guys that can do a lot of different things, right? They can play down in the slot. They can, handle, two deep looks. They can handle in certain situations being single high. But I would also throw out Marcus Banks of Mississippi State. He is someone that can play safety and also corner. So it kind of gives you that versatility right now. Even when you watch a team, it's funny when you watch a team like Georgia, they are so interchangeable in their defensive backs that you really don't know if you're looking at a corner or a safety. But that's a good thing. And I feel like someone like Marcus Banks out of Mississippi State can do just that, can play multiple roles in the secondary. You want to be at the pro level, you only have 46 on game day. So you kind of want to make sure you're able to do more than one thing, especially at a position that's going to get a lot of work in the secondary. So I kind of like him too.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that, Emery, because I've been saying for a little while now that this safety class wasn't great. And then the other day I was watching Trey Taylor out of Air Force, who I thought was a really impressive player. And then I find myself thinking, I'll add him to the list of the guys I like. And then I start listing in my head that, I like Evan Williams. I like Hicks. I like, the list kind of, as you think about it, and I start saying to myself, is it really a weak class? Or is there just, because there's not, as you said, there's not Ed Reed, so people shrug it off. But I'm going through the list and I'm seeing 7 or 8 or 9 guys that I would be, they may not be day one locks, rock solid starters, but guys who could become really good players. Hicks out of Washington State, I've been a big fan of his for a couple of years. So there are some really good safeties in this class. Oladapo was a guy that we saw. I think Dylan, in fact, we mentioned it. We saw Jeff Ulbrich, the Jets DC, who was down there talking to him at the Senior Bowl, spending a little bit of extra time with him. But in terms of between the two guys that jump out of me right now, or that I really like, are Hicks and Taylor. Any thoughts on those guys?
Here's the thing. There are certain programs, and I know coaching staffs change and things, are fluid at the collegiate football level, right? But there's certain programs and certain positions, you kind of could just trust sight unseen. Oregon State the last 3 years has had some outstanding defensive backs. So it's like Utah, right? You could just trust those guys without even having to watch their tape. Kansas State offensive lineman, I'm good, So you have certain programs and coaches. Obviously, Ohio State defensive lineman with Larry Johnson and what he does there. So, but yeah, Oregon State has been good. But Taylor, to me, is shocking because, you think there'd be a lot more talk about a guy that won the Jim Thorpe Award. I find that just fascinating that this was the best defensive back in the country, according to the Jim Thorpe Award. And when you get a guy coming from Air Force, he's going to be disciplined. He's not going to blow assignments, and he's going to be assignment sound. He has good leadership skills from the back end. And, you kind of want a quarterback at every level of your defense. He could be that quarterback at safety. And the good part is, what I like about him the most is that he finds a way to make the play that needs to be made. Yeah, he gambles a little bit. But when a play needs to be made, he has a great sense of timing. He usually makes that play. So, maybe he'll be there on day three because of, people are worried about the military commitment. It changes every year, I feel like, where, if you draft a guy, he could play. He's good to go. But then 1 year, it's like, well, he has to serve his 2 year commitment first before he can go out there and play. I would just secure his services regardless because he's a very good football player. Again, you don't win the Jim Thorpe Award and not be a good football player. And I think people are not talking about him enough.
Yeah, which is because generally, I think the school of thought to me was always sort of if the academy schools let their guys go pro, that guy becomes a poster child for those academies. And kind of, put every time he makes a play, someone's going to say Air Force, and young kids watching that, like that's free advertising, And I remember David Robinson years ago with the Spurs, like that was a big thing that supposedly the Navy was like, look, they're going to, every time this guy scores a point, they're going to mention the Navy, like let's let him play. So yeah, that's a weird, weird thing that they're so touch and go with it. But sorry, go ahead, Dylan, with yours.
No, that's fine. Just kind of breaking away a little bit from the draft specific talk, but just an overall view of the Jets. I know you've done reviews of each team, so you're pretty well versed in the transactions that the team has made and you keep up with it. But it seems like the media expectations overall seem to be pretty scattered throughout for the Jets this year. Some say no matter what, nothing is going to work that we do. Some say it's Super Bowl or bust. So from your perspective, how would you define success or failure for the Jets in 2024?
Success would be a postseason appearance. And unfortunately, they picked the wrong year to have a very, strong roster, right? Because look at the AFC North. It's just crazy. Look at the AFC South outside of Tennessee. It's crazy. And in the East, your own division, you got the Dolphins and Bills. Now, the Bills may be a little bit weakened based off what happened with Stephon Diggs. But man, the AFC North is looking like a team, a conference, a division that can get four teams in. Their whole division can go to the playoffs. So what the Jets need is their roster is good on both sides of the ball. They don't have many holes. The biggest and gaping question and slash hole is quarterback. We don't know what Aaron Rodgers is going to be coming off of an Achilles. We don't know what you're going to get from him in terms of, even if you go and look at in a vacuum, the four plays he played in a regular season, I believe it was, he didn't look comfortable in the pocket anyway. It's almost like he would have got hurt later in that game as opposed to early in the game. So we still don't know what we're going to get from a guy that had 1 foot out the door already, was said he was thinking about retiring. And usually when that happens, you're kind of already there, right?
So Parcells, right?
Exactly, right?
When you're thinking about retiring, you're retired.
You're retired already. I love that they went out and got Tyrod Taylor. Problem with Taylor, he'll give you a couple of plays and then he gets hurt. So that's why I felt like quarterback is still in play for the Jets. But That's the biggest question. If they can get, you know, stable, if they can promise decent Aaron Rodgers for 17 games, this team should make the postseason, right? And because I feel like everything will fall in place. People won't play you guys differently. This is a situation where I try to make the point when we're doing these analysis during the season, like, and people are wondering why teams aren't having success when they're loaded on paper or talented. It's like, well, because the defense doesn't respect the quarterback. And when you don't respect the quarterback, you then can tee off on a run game. You then can tee off and roll covers for their best receiver. And you could just really crowd and smother the line of scrimmage. It makes everything look ineffective and inefficient. But when you respect the quarterback, everything else opens up, even if you have lesser players. So that's what we saw last year from the Jets. There was no fear of the Jets passing game. And so if Rodgers can be stable, and he doesn't have to be MVP Rodgers, he just can't be what was out there last year for, you know, you guys for the whole season. If he can just be stable for 17 games, then this team should make the postseason, because that'll make the defense better. Breece Hall will have more advantageous lanes to run through. The passing game will look competent. And all of that will just make the overall team better, because you guys were in a lot of games last year. It wasn't like the team overall was just terrible. You're losing a lot of close games because you couldn't score. And so I feel like that's how vital this position is for this particular team on this side of the NFL conferences. The AFC is like a gauntlet this year.
Yeah, and to go back to your point, like, that you made originally, is that, like, last year, if all the pieces were in place, that felt like the year to make the run. This year, teams have gotten a lot better. Obviously, the Texans, they were ranked number 3 in the conference before the Stephon Diggs trade in some, you know, power rankings. So it's going to be interesting to see if the Jets can not only win the division, but just make the playoffs. Because like you said, AFC North possibly has 3 or 4 like contenders. So it's definitely interesting.
And yeah, one and more before we let you go. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, like, if you look at, you know, how Indy was battling the Texans for the playoff spot, and their quarterback only played two plays with Jonathan Taylor. So now you have that kid coming back. It's going to be tough for the Jets. But again, this is not a bad roster. This is just a team that needs stability at quarterback, and hopefully they can get that from Aaron Rodgers this season.
And so we've touched on the possibility of quarterback Emery early on, but there's 3 or 4 guys in my mind, and we've talked about on a few of our shows, who could be a target at that sort of 111, or if the Jets move around a little in that range. You know, Jordan Travis is a guy. Michael Pratt's another guy. Dylan's been a big Spencer Rattler guy all year, talking him up. I hadn't watched a ton of him. Early in the year, I said what little I watched, I thought he looked better than the previous version. The other day, I went back and watched like 4 or 5 of his games, and I was like, I'm on board. Like, what this kid did from the pocket under pressure, guys breathing down his neck, defenders in his face, knowing he's going to get smacked and hanging in there and putting the ball on target with very little to work with in terms of offensive support outside of Xavier Leggett. I'm 100% on board with the idea of Rattler now, whereas before I was like, well, I need to see more. Well, now I've seen more, and I'm good with that. But I also like Travis. Who are some of these mid-round, like a quarterback who might be there anywhere from sort of late second to mid-fourth that the Jets could draft and develop behind a Rodgers?
Well, you know, you talked about my number 3 and number 4 quarterbacks in Rattler and also Jordan Travis. Pratt is a good option too, because what I like about Pratt and what he was able to do, he did it at Tulane. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm from New Orleans, and I know Tulane is always like the stepchild of the sports landscape, or people just overlook. When I was a high school recruit, my senior year in high school, Tulane was undefeated. That was a Sean King year. But the problem was Tulane was 3 blocks from my high school. So I was like, yeah, I'm not going to be on the same street for another 4 to 5 years. So yeah, thanks, but no thanks, Tulane, right? So Tulane has always been a sleeping giant. And the fact that he did it there, and you saw how valuable his absence was when they played Ole Miss. Had he played against Ole Miss, I know for a fact they'd beat Ole Miss. So that's someone that has the athleticism, still needs a little bit more, you know, smoothing out, rough around the edges. But that's why you draft him, and put him behind two good, you know, guys that are you know, good teachers. And Rodgers, although he gets a bad rap for it, but Rodgers is a pretty good teacher. You could ask any one of his former teammates. And also Tyrod Taylor, who does a good job. And he also, you know, fits that mold of what they have on the roster. Athletic, can move, can throw on a run, all of those things. But, yeah, I feel like people also act as if Jordan Travis's leg was amputated. Like, bro, he broke his leg.
Fantastic player. He's going to be okay. He's
a great player. You know what I'm saying? And Rattler, you touched on why I liked him a lot, is the fact that he's battle-tested. He has gone through the highs and lows, and you need some – especially, this is why I wanted Justin Fields to go to New York and Zach Wilson to go to San Francisco when they were coming out of the draft as prospects, because you have to be mentally tough to handle this market. And I felt like Fields would have been – you saw he handled Chicago. Mm-hmm. I felt like that's what this market needs. Rattler has been battle-tested. You know, hell, Jordan Travis has been battle-tested. He said it at the combine. It's like, man – I couldn't hit a receiver when I was a freshman at Florida State. I was terrible. And look at where he has gone from to where he is now. You like that guys have gone through some things. Pratt has played at Tulane and has elevated them to where they beat USC in the Cotton Bowl. Those words I never would have thought would have come out of my mouth. You know, Tulane beats USC in the Cotton Bowl. Didn't make sense. I would have thought you were lying. So you look at Pratt, you look at those are three excellent options for the Jets if they're able to select one of the three.
Yeah, and just to touch on Rattler, I think when people hear the words battle-tested with a prospect, they seem to be excited about it. But when it's a quarterback, and specifically Rattler, knowing what he's been through, most of us have seen QB1 and his character concerns, and he had to go through a whole maturation process. But when you hear battle-tested with quarterback, they don't always associate that the same with like another prospect at a different position. So I'm glad that you said that about Spencer, because he is battle-tested. He has matured. He's come a long way since that QB1 documentary. He went through two different programs. So, and he excelled in South Carolina when he still had better stats per se at Oklahoma, but he excelled better in South Carolina. And that's more of his mindset, a testament to his mindset, than just his natural playing ability.
And you look at where he, if we keep it a whole buck, he outplayed Drake May in that opener. They just didn't have the offensive line to help him out. They had the offensive line they had on the back end of the season, they not only beat North Carolina, they blew them out. And so pound for pound, he outplayed Drake May. So this is a really good quarterback prospect that someone's going to get themselves a steal whenever he selects them.
All right, Emory Hunt, football game plan. Check out the draft guide online. Emory, go ahead and give out your info. Tell folks where they can get the draft guide. Like I said, I picked it up a few days ago. I've been flipping through it as I'm watching more prospects, and great work as always. So congrats to you on that.
Well, I appreciate that, man. And listen, I love that you guys sing the praises of the draft guide, because it helps out the fan in terms of, you know, who's on the roster. Like Irvin Charles, if you go back to my draft guide 3 years ago, Irvin Charles is in there as one of my top inside wide receivers, because he's a core special teamer and also plays big inside as well. So you get guys, you get scout reports on everybody like that. So you can go to footballgameplan.com/2024 draft guide. Is available. It's a PDF, so don't expect a big 1,000 page book to arrive in your mailbox. It'll arrive in your inbox as an email, and so you'll get a full color scout report on a lot of 900 prospects are in this one. So you get 900 prospects scouting reports, individual scouting reports. This is the largest draft guide out there. And if you've been a supporter since 2020, since I put out the draft guide, right now you have over 4,300 individual scouting reports at your fingertips. It helps you out understanding the roster, because we know the draft is bigger than 7 rounds. So when guys pop up as rookie undrafted free agents, preseason, throughout the regular season, when guys pop up on the roster, I'm pretty sure we'll have a scouting report on them and you'll be well informed. So go check that out, footballgameplan.com/2024 draft guide.
All right, Emory, thanks again. We really appreciate it. Hopefully maybe get you on after the draft to talk about what the Jets do.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I love day three. I'll be on day three on CBS Sports HQ, so you can check me out there, breaking down the prospects, and always love to jump back on and grade the draft in terms of undrafted and drafted, because I know that is the entire draft class, and it's fun. I love to come back on.
Yeah, that was a point I saw you make the other day that I think that's why I became a big fan of yours early on. I'm kind of the same way. You were talking about how, and I don't mean to keep you extra, having just said we'd let you go, but when you were saying to somebody the other day, I don't have to spend a lot of time watching a prospect from Ohio State. He plays at Ohio State. I know how good he is. Like, right. I don't see the point in doing a top 100. And that's kind of how I feel. Like, it's not till the last month or so before the draft that I realize, like, oh, God, I haven't watched the LSU guys yet. Because I'm watching the Tulanes and the Oregon States and, like, the smaller, lesser-known guys, and then dive into the big names later on who you don't have to watch 8 Malik Nabers games to decide whether or not he can play. You know, you can see a few reps and go, okay, that guy's a stud. You know, am I going to write a 5-page article on this guy when you need 10 seconds to see how good he is? So you're and Chris Schubert, our other host, isn't here today. He loves the mid-majors, the smaller guys, and kind of getting to know those guys. And I can vouch for what you just said, Emery. I love during the year when players pop up from out of nowhere and nobody knows who they are. Emery will be like, here's our draft guy scouting report on this dude who just ran one back who you've never heard of before. So keep up the great work, Emery. I really appreciate it.
I appreciate you guys, man. And thanks a lot for showing that support. It means a lot to know that the draft guide that I was so hesitant to put out in 2020 is useful and folks love it. And I appreciate the support always, man. I appreciate you guys.
All right. Take care, Emery.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Emery Hunt, football game plan. And it's legit, man. Like I said, I've been getting I hate to admit. I don't think it's a big secret that I'm kind of an idiot. The first year I bought it, I was one of those dummies that thought it was going to come in the mail. So, like, it was in my inbox the next day, and I didn't, like weeks later, I'm like, man, that draft guide never came. And I think I may have messaged Emery, and he was like, yeah, man, it's a PDF. Like, there's 1,000 players profiled. I'm not sending a 5-pound book to England.
Yeah, right.
And I was like, oh, like, I think the draft had already happened. I never looked at the guide. Pre-draft, I never looked at it. But since then, now I know to – it's just,
yeah, imagine if you didn't and you just never picked up another copy of his again because you just thought he didn't send it
and come on the show and badmouth him. Don't buy his draft guide, he's a con man, it never shows up in the mail.
No, absolutely,
he took my money.
Absolutely the opposite. And I yeah. think I'm blanking on the name, but I want to say it was Javelin Guidry when he made it to the team as a UDFA. I think Emery was the only person that had a write-up on Javelin Guidry where I could find out, because I was a huge Guidry fan, and I even up until this season before he got hurt, I thought he was going to make the initial 53 over somebody like Bryce Hall.
Yeah.
So it was nice to see him have like those obscure players. Like, I'm pretty sure last year they've had Zaire Barnes. He definitely wrote him up, even though like most mock draft simulators didn't even have him in a realistic option in the 7th round. And that's why he said mock drafts are kind of silly. And I agree too, because people get into a mindset of like, oh, in PFF simulator, Christian Jones is always here at 72, or Patrick Paul is always here at 72. So
yeah, you just
they
never
get
know,
into that
man.
Mindset. Yeah. And
I mean, how many simulators would have had Jermaine Johnson still on the board?
Right.
The year the Jets got him, you know,
in
the 20s or whatever it was. He went so much later than a lot of people thought.
Yeah. Anything.
But it's always fun to get him on. Amadri, the tackle from Yale, if I'm saying his name right.
Amagaji.
I'm trying not to butcher it, but I can't even remember. It may have been one game and it was like the TV angle, so it wasn't really a film angle, but what little you could make out, I'm watching, I'm like, this guy looks pretty dominant. Again, it's Ivy League, so you're kind of like, eh, but you know, at some point you got to respect what a guy's doing and say, look, he's doing what he's doing. One guy I kind of regret not mentioning was because he's a guy we saw in Mobile, since watching him on film. Since then, I think he's not getting enough attention, and Emery has him about, like, I think 11th, is Ethan Driscoll from Marshall. Plays with a lot of power, a ton of torque. Like, the number of times I saw him just grab a guy and just rip him out of the running lane, you know, just twist those hips and take him out. Saw that a ton from him. And I didn't ask him about Javon Foster. anyway, we'll see. Javon Foster, like I said, a lot of folks seem to think that he's a right tackle. Even though he played on the left side in college, but but I 100% agree. And that was the reason I asked him about Graham Barton having him listed as a tackle. Cause after watching him at Duke, I was like, all right, I get that he has short arms, but I've always said kind of exactly what Emery was saying. Like, I'm going to let you prove that you can't play tackle before I move you into guard or center. Mm-hmm. And maybe you can, and fine, but I'm at least, once I get you into camp, I'm going to be like, all right, like to start things off, you're playing tackle because that's what you played at a dominant level in college against some good competition. And I'm not just going to assume that you're unable to do it because of your arm length. And right. maybe the guy goes out there and gets his ass kicked in, fine, you move him inside. But the fact that you just move him without even getting a look at it, I can't imagine. I can't think of any other thing in life where you do that. You're like, oh, I got this thing that serves this purpose, but I'm not even going to try it for that because it probably won't work. Well, try it, you know? So,
yeah, I want to say it was Peter Skoronski. They let him play tackle, and it didn't go so hot, and now they moved him inside to guard, and he's excelling now at guard. And sure, the draft analyst that would be like, oh, I told you all along he was a guard. Right, but you want to try to get the premier position out of him first, right? Like, that would just make more sense.
It's not even a matter of I doubt he can play tackle, but I'm going to find out before I move him.
Right. You know? And even while he's playing tackle in his first, let's say his whole first season, he only plays games at tackle. That doesn't mean he can't practice at guard. So you can see the difference firsthand without sacrificing a whole game of him. Let's kick him inside to guard and see what happens. Because once you actually start moving a player around the offensive line, I feel like it's just a slippery slope. And that kind of happened with AVT. They ended up 4 weeks in a row, he was at a different position, it felt like. And then, not saying that's why he got hurt, but when you don't have that muscle memory all the time of, okay, I'm in this position and these are my landmarks and I'm doing this on these types of plays, players like that routine, that mundane muscle memory movement, and AVT got hurt and now they're trying to put him at one position. So go with the best and then start moving it around, because I feel like it just gets hairy once you start doing
it. Yeah, and I've mentioned that before, that I'm going to need someone to explain. I know Robert Saleh said it, but I don't care that he said it. I need someone to explain to me how moving from guard to tackle makes you tear your tricep. Like, I don't – oh, he got hurt.
Was he talking about that injury or the ACL?
Well, they just said he's been injured several times and we're going to stop moving him because he gets hurt. I'm like, would he not be using his arms if he was playing guard? Would he never have had to run if he was playing guard instead of tackle? Like, these are football injuries making football movements. And it's like people want so badly to have an explanation for something that makes them comfortable that they'll accept something silly like that. Oh, well, AVT got hurt because he played a different position. So every time a guy moves positions on the O-line, he gets hurt. It's football. Guys get hurt. And the fact that Robert Saleh came out and said that, I was like, it's almost like he wanted people to be comfortable, but also wanted to kind of, I mean, not that a guy needs a pass for getting injured, but kind of let's help AVT avoid that injury prone label by blaming it on the fact that he played guard instead of tackle that week, or tackle instead of guard. And that will be the reason why he got hurt. And then people just feel like, oh, well, good. Well, he's not going to move around this year, so now he won't get hurt. I'd love to see the data that tells us offensive linemen are more likely to get injured moving from guard to tackle, that triceps injuries skyrocket.
And when I say slippery slope, I meant more for like
performance. Yeah, and I wasn't talking about that. I wasn't talking about injuries, but
they just start playing AVT differently because they're not used to it. Like, if you switch a guy from right to left tackle, like, I know he only played right guard and right tackle when you're talking about Vera Tucker specifically, but like Becton, he played both sides and they're flipping him back and forth. And it's like, you don't think that's detrimental to a player in season who's been practicing one position for so long? So yeah, it definitely becomes a slippery slope, but no, the correlation to, all right, we found his home, now it's turn injuries off on AVT. Like, that's not how that's going to work.
Yeah. And sometimes though, I get what you're saying, but it's funny you mention it, because I remember Becton, I can't remember if it was his rookie year. It must've been, cause he didn't play after that. Maybe it was heading into his second year. And I, because the way the offensive line, like, because of the personnel they had, I kind of said out loud, it might actually be in the team's best interest to kick Becton inside to guard for one year. And I can't even remember who my alternative was at tackle, but for whatever reason, I thought it would make sense. And people were like, oh, he's not a guard, you're going to stunt his growth, which it may have. I wouldn't say that's not correct, but they've got to do what's best for the team. Like, they can't, like, and that's what I was saying. Like, and people often didn't have a lot to say, because my response was often, okay, he's never played guard before, but would he be a better guard tomorrow than Greg Van Roten will be? And everyone knew the answer to that was yes. And so that was my approach, was like, I'm doing what is best for the team. I understand that Becton won't want to play guard. I know, you know, everyone's like tattling on me, like tagging Duke Manyweather. Duke, look what this guy said. Come get him. Bah, 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 bah. Like, and I know Duke Manyweather wouldn't like it. But again, at the time he was working with Becton. And yeah, he's an offensive line genius. I get that. But, you know, as a guy who was training with Becton, Becton is his priority. It's like what's mm-hmm. best for my guy, right. Which I completely understand. That's the relationship they have. Mm-hmm. But my concern was what's best for the Jets. And again, I can't even remember who the tackle options were, but for whatever reason, I thought it may have been when they, it doesn't matter when, but my whole point was Becton is an immediate upgrade over Van Roten, even if he's never taken a snap at guard in his life. Because mm-hmm. At that point, that was pre-injury Becton when we thought he was going to be heading to the Hall of Fame. Mm-hmm. And I was literally saying, like, do it for a year, like a 1 year fix or whatever it was. I think that, I think sometimes there's doing what's right for the team and doing what's right for the guy. And it's, yeah. you know,
it's the push pull of it. Yep.
And moving a guy for a few games isn't going to derail his career. Hopefully fewer injuries this year. The offensive line, the O will be better. And whenever they address offensive line in the draft, I saw something. I feel like, and I said to someone the other day, Jackson Powers Johnson, watching him, and you know, I was watching an Oregon game, and he's blowing people up and he's covering 25, 30 yards and taking guys out of plays. And I'm like, yeah, that guy's a lock for the first round. I feel like I don't see him mentioned in the first round as much as we did a few weeks ago.
Yeah, I just watched a mock NFL Stock Exchange. It was a guest mock, so they had a third person on who's not normally on the show, and they did not take Johnson or Jackson Powers Johnson in the first round. I think Daniel Jeremiah or Matthew Miller, one of the NFL or ESPN analysts, tweeted out that they're not lowering on JPJ, but they're kind of coming back to their preseason, mid-season rankings, and he kind of spiked up in his hype around the Senior Bowl because he did have a really good Senior Bowl, but now they're coming back around to, like, maybe he is just a early round two guy instead of we need to get him in the first round type of player. Obviously it only takes one, and that's kind of like the easy cop-out answer, but yeah, I have seen not people souring on him, but kind of backing off that first round hype for sure with him, which I mean,
yeah,
good for the Jets, right? Like, keep bumping these guys down, like,
at any position. Yeah, but and actually only because I mentioned that, I was just Googling it real quick. Did not realize, because I've been running around, been kind of busy today. I don't know if you saw this. Daniel Jeremiah's latest top 50 just came out 11 hours ago.
No.
Jackson Powers Johnson, he's got 30th. So he's got him in the top 32.
Okay.
But that, of course, does not mean he will be a top 30 pick.
Right.
Let's see if there's anything super interesting before we roll out here.
Because he had a lot of offensive tackles and a lot of wide receivers in his last
top 50. He had 11 tackles in the last one.
Yeah, I think it was 11 and like 10 or 11 wide receivers also. So absolutely stacked. Let's see
what we've got. He's got Caleb Williams 1, Marvin Harrison 2, Adunze 3, Neighbors 4, Drake May 5. What's that? Yeah, that's not what I expected there.
Mm-hmm.
Jaden Daniels 6, Brock Bowers 7, Joe Alt 8, Terrion Arnold 9.
So I'm not pushing back or saying he's wrong, yeah. But I wonder where Daniels started on his list, because I always feel like when you're at that position, like you're the Daniel Jeremiahs of the world, they always say you rank with your eyes and mock with your ears. But at some point in the offseason during this draft process, quarterbacks get slammed up the boards, and it's not because of their film. We've seen the film. Jaden Daniels was the Heisman Trophy winner, and I still don't think he was sixth 4 months ago on Jeremiah's list. So like, that's the interesting one to me, is how often they push up quarterbacks because they'd rather say Jaden was my sixth ranked player and the team took him at 3 instead of Jaden was my 22nd ranked player and the team took him at 3.
That's exactly what it is. They want to be as closely excuse me
with the quarterbacks only. Everybody else, it's like Adunze is at 3. Like,
so he's got Fuaga 10.
Okay.
He's got Fatanu 11. Dallas Turner 12. Quinyon Mitchell, the corner out of Toledo, is 13. Jared Verse, 14. He's got Fashanu, 15.
There it is, yep.
Leitu Latu, 16, who that's apparently up two spots for him. Fashanu stayed the same. Yeah, I'll note if the guys moved up or down. 17, Brian Thomas Jr. 18, J.C. Latham drops two spots to 18. Byron Murphy, the DT from Texas, stays at 19. J.J. McCarthy moves up one spot to 20. Chop Robinson, the Penn State edge rusher, moves up two spots to 21. Again, this is Daniel Jeremiah's latest top 50. Amarius Mims, Georgia OT, drops two spots to 22. Tyler Guyton drops one spot to 23. There he is, Graham Barton, up three spots to 24. Let's see what he says here about Barton.
Daniel He's definitely Jeremiah an interesting on, one.
Yeah, Daniel Jeremiah on Graham Barton. Well, he did have a phenomenal pro day.
Mm-hmm.
Barton started at left tackle during his final three seasons. Prior to that, he started five at center. That's where I see him playing at the next level. He has ideal size for the position and average length. Pass pro, he's quick out of his stance, plays with knee bend, has agility to redirect. Struggles against power rushers, doesn't play long-armed, exposes his chest and gives ground. Fortunately, he loses less slowly on most occasions, allowing the quarterback time to get the ball out. He's a technician of the run game, always hits his landmarks with his hands down, with his hands on down blocks before sinking and driving with his lower half. He's excellent on combo blocks, under control as a puller. Overall, he's an athletic center with the ability to survive at tackle if needed. See, even if you think he can survive there, put him there and take a look. Maybe he'll be a little better. I'll shut up about it now, but it really...
No, I completely agree there. Yeah, you have to at least try, because then you're getting a better position. Like, tackle is superior to guard.
You're addressing a more valuable spot.
Yeah, and center is even more valuable than guard. So if you have a guy who could play guard center, like Tippmann, look where they're playing him this year, or projecting to play him this year. Center, it's more important. Let Simpson play guard. So.
Yeah, and real quick, and I don't – everyone, anyone who watches knows I hate hot takes. I hate saying stuff that's like, oh, there's no way that could happen. But I just keep having this thought. As I look at this draft class, when I look at guys like JPJ and Graham Barton, if the Jets were to get another second round or a move down in the first round, I think if they were to take one of these guys, I could see them beating out John Simpson. I know everyone's excited about Simpson, big guy, powerful guy, comes from Baltimore, blah, blah, blah. When I watched him again, it's one of those things where you're like, okay, he looks better than Lakin Tomlinson, so you're happy, but that's still not saying a whole lot. The thing I saw with him that worried me most, and I brought this up after watching some film on him. Everyone's like, oh, he didn't give up any sacks. I'm like, he didn't give up any sacks, but I only watched a handful of games, but I saw him get driven back pretty promptly in the pocket a few times where he didn't give up a sack, but I'm looking at that play and envisioning, all right, what if it's 41-year-old post-Achilles Aaron Rodgers back there and not Lamar Jackson?
Right.
Like, that could have easily been a sack. And then you see another one. That could have been a sack. That could have been, like, so I will guarantee you he's not giving up one sack this year. He's going to give up more than what he, I think that's what he gave up last year was one sack. He's going to give up more than one sack this season. And I'm not, I'm not sitting here saying he's going to suck. No. I think fans are a little higher on him just because we're so relieved that Lakin Tomlinson is gone. But if you get a JPJ or a Graham Barton, I would absolutely have them compete with him and not be shocked if one of those guys took that job. But again, the Jets first have to be in position to do that. Halfway point, Cooper DeJean, 25th. Edrin Cooper, Texas A&M linebacker, drops two spots to 26. A.D. Mitchell, Texas wide receiver, drops two spots to 27. Ennis Rakestraw, Missouri corner, drops two spots to 28. Bo Nix, who I still think is going to go to Denver at 12, drops to 29. He had a million starts in college. And here is 30, the man who started this conversation, Jaxon Powers-Johnson. Nate Wiggins, Nate Wiggins, 31, feels kind of low. But it's listen, there's some talent to get. Here's a guy. Here's a guy. What's that?
It might be his size. He's a little slender.
He is. He's a smaller guy. By the way, not to get side railed, did you see the comment on the one of our recent shows? It may have been, I can't remember if it was a solo show.
No.
and this is just to have a little fun. Somebody said they wished we wouldn't drink during the show because it's disgusting to watch people drink. And I thought, what do you do at restaurants? Like when you're out with your family.
Yeah, right.
Let me know when you're going to drink. Am I
supposed to do this to take a drink?
Exactly. Like I'm sipping a drink out of a Jets cup during a Jets podcast. Right. And to each his own. I just thought that was weird. That was my first thought. I'm like, it's disgusting to see people drink, but what do you do when you're out? Like,
I could understand more if he was like, the sound bothers me of us gargling or something. Sure.
Gargling or like using a straw, like a 5-year-old, you know? Fine. Yeah. I'm just taking a sip out of a cup.
If you don't like to look at it, I'm sorry.
Yeah,
like, I can't sit here for an hour and not get some kind of
that's
fluid.
The thing. Like while I'm talking constantly, like you need to wet the whistle or whatever.
Of course.
But so here's a guy, Dylan. I feel like he was getting top 10 hype all season, and then out of nowhere, the last couple months, you just don't hear his name. And the Jets aren't taking him, don't get me wrong. But Jazon Newton out of Illinois.
I knew you were going there. Yep.
Like this guy, all and rightfully so. You watch him on film. He's explosive. He's got a great motor. The build, like you look at he, you're like, yeah, top 10 pick. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, and somebody said the other day, and that might be what got me thinking about it. It was a few days earlier when I saw him in probably a simulator or a ranking, and he was like 20 whatever. Daniel Jeremiah here has got him what 32. And I thought to myself, man, he's all of a sudden, based on nothing, he's gone from top 10 to the 20s and 30s. And then the next day I saw somebody tweet out, I forget who it was, saying if Jazon Newton played at Alabama or, you know, a Blue Bloods university, we'd be talking about him as a top 10 pick. And I was like, you know, just a couple days ago, I was thinking to myself, someone's going to get insane value. Like somebody like the Dolphins might get him. After
to
you know,
replace Christian Wilkins, yeah.
Exactly. You lose Christian Wilkins and then you draft Jazon Newton. Oh, and you know, that would
I would love nothing more for the Bears to take him at 9 because they had the chance to draft, in my opinion, the superior prospect in Jalen Carter. And I'm pretty sure they traded out of that pick. So if they went back and got Jazon Newton, one, it would push a really good player down to the Jets at 10. But I feel like that would be a good fit as well. So I'm still holding on to hope for him, but yeah, he should be talked about as like top 10, top 15 for sure.
Yeah. 33, Michael Penix Jr. 34, mm-hmm. Ladd McConkey, Georgia wide receiver, number 35, Texas wide receiver, Xavier Worthy up 6 spots. I think that's the biggest jump I've seen.
Wow.
And Worthy is a guy, as a freshman against Oklahoma, he popped onto my radar and I was intrigued, you know, a guy that I thought I was really anxious to see where he'd go. And I would love, you know, there's a few guys, Xavier Worthy, Brian Thomas, like some of these receivers, if the Jets move down to 17, 18, 19, even with them calling Worthy the 35th ranked player, I would be more than happy to see Aaron Rodgers throwing him the football. 36, Kool-Aid McKinstry, corner out of Alabama, West Virginia lineman, Zach Frazier, center guard type. Braden Fisk, Florida State, DT, 38. Darius Robinson, I thought he was in person in Mobile, was like the most jacked dude in the room. Like you walk past him, you're like, that guy, he just, if you didn't know he was a football player, you'd be like, that guy's a football player. He just, the build, the shoulders, he just looked like a dude that would do what he does, which is wreck guys. Florida wide receiver, Ricky Pearsall is 40. Peyton Wilson, linebacker, NC State, 41. I wish there was a way the Jets could get him. I know they won't, and it wouldn't make sense, but I want him on the Jets.
Oh, yeah.
Troy Franklin, Oregon wide receiver, 42. Keon Coleman, 43, FSU wide receiver. Junior Colston, Michigan linebacker, 44. Malachi Corley, up 2 spots to 45, the Western Kentucky receiver. Marshawn Neyland jumps 2 spots to 46, the Western Michigan edge rusher. Roman Wilson, 47, up 2 spots, the Michigan wideout. And then we have LSU DT Mason Smith at 48. Jordan Morgan drops 5 spots to 49, the Arizona tackle. And 50th, who was not on the list last time around, Rutgers cornerback Max Melton, and he bumped Kamari Lassiter, Georgia cornerback, who is no longer top 50.
Wow.
So that's
pretty good list.
Yeah. I mean, it's a deep class. The Jets should be sitting in a really good spot. Should be. They've got to find a way to not screw it up. I think next week would want to talk about obviously more prospects, but the more I think about the way last season unfolded and the way we keep talking about, we're like, oh, this, you know, this defense is, they're good. They don't need much. You know, last year they were really good. I think some people have some blind spots. They had some really bad week games last year. They weren't dominant across the board, but the question becomes, and it, you know, it's a reality people may not like to admit, but were there days where they were just like, we're not going anywhere? Like, was the effort not there?
Oh yeah.
You know, you're
How many times did they pick up their helmet after a three and out from the offense? And they're just like, all right, we're back out here there again, right? We got to try. And like, when you start hearing defensive players in the post game press conferences saying that they didn't do enough because they didn't score touchdowns to win the game, that's a problem, because you could have three turnovers. And if you didn't run any of those back, like, there's a good chance you're coming away with zero. If you're lucky, 3 points out of those interceptions. So it's like, it's really unfortunate to have that type of discrepancy from offense to defense. And it definitely affects the mood. Like you said, they're humans. It's not Madden. Yeah. Your defense isn't going to go out there and shut out a team when they're getting shit on the other end. Like, you know, your offense is getting the crap kicked out of them. They're not going to be able to.
Washington game, though. That's the one that scared me a little bit. Yeah. I was like, you should not be giving up. Like, you have a win. But again, even when you have a win that's there for the taking, when it's a win that you know doesn't matter, I don't know. I don't want to say they weren't busting their asses, but – and I think that may have been the game. There was one game later in the year, and I remember Bart Scott, like, they gave up a ton of yards. I think they gave up a lot of points. And Bart Scott even said after the game, he's like, there's a lot of guys out there right now making business decisions, you know, just realizing our season's over. The outcome of this game doesn't matter. Can I get this guy? Probably. Do I want to? Not really.
And then everybody gets up for the Patriots game to end the season on a high note, which is understandable. But like, there is that lull of like 4, 5, 6 games when your team is like out of it, when they were 4-3, despite all the injuries that they had. Like, yeah, it gets really unfortunate once the team is out of the playoffs. But yeah, you just got to hope that Rodgers gives the defense confidence every time that, like, say they do surrender a touchdown. It's not the end of the world, you know. I want to know if Robert Saleh changes his philosophy with kickoffs. A lot of times we see the Jets put their defense out there first. They put their strength out there first. I want to know with Aaron Rodgers, do they put Rodgers out on the field first? You know, obviously they don't get the ball in the second half, which is a big factor in it. They get to lap teams. I mean, you have to score. You have to score twice in a game to lap somebody to begin with.
I think that's the biggest. And I think most teams do it nowadays. I feel like Belichick started it.
It's the second half.
I think teams defer like 80% of the time or something like that.
But if you're putting Rodgers on the field, he's the spark plug now. You know, the defense doesn't have to be. If they go out and they score a touchdown, boom, pin your ears back. Hassan Reddick is going to come after you. You know what I mean? Like, you put the defense in a better position out the gates. Obviously, I get the philosophy of lapping, and you can lap somebody now with Aaron Rodgers. You give that man 23 seconds and 2 timeouts, he can get you into field goal touchdown range before the half. You come out and score another touchdown out of the half. That's a 10-point swing. I totally get it. But I just wonder if, like, against certain opponents, they want to look for a fast start.
Sure there will be some games that I wouldn't expect a philosophical shift, but and you do see that. And that's why it's sort of, you know, the broadcasters will always mention it. Oh, like, you know, so-and-so switches it up and they're going to receive the ball. Normally they would defer. And so it's like, I think deferring has become the norm, but there will be certain opponents, certain weeks where you're like, striking first is the priority this week. So let's go, let's take the football. We'll see what they do with that. But I think there's a good conversation to be had with, how good or bad is this defense really? Because personnel-wise, they should be, you know, top 10. And we'll see what they do in the draft. You added Tavondre Sweat, somebody like that. I think you've got to get a DT in there. Sweat's my top choice. But if it's Murphy will be gone. You're not getting him. No. But you could get a Tavondre Sweat. Ruka Rororo. There's a few guys in there that you can draft and plug in. Fisk, you know, with the great motor, we all know that. So we'll see. There's a few different ways they can go, but that was, you know, I saw someone say again this week on the forums at Jet Nation, just kind of referenced in passing, and it's something that we always kind of assume, well, the defense is awesome, and I'm like, well, They had some weeks last year where they weren't awesome, but I understand the human element. The games were over. The season was over. As you said, they're not robots. They're going to have days where maybe the effort's not there. If they know at the end of the day, it's not going to mean anything. So how much of it was that, and how much of it was, well, maybe they're not that good on defense. I think they need to – they've got to add a safety. I would love add a safety and a tackle before the draft, and you can just – then you're – like we talk now about how they have a lot of flexibility, and they do. But to me, you can't get any – like those are the two things stopping them from being 1,000,000% flexible. Like they – because they do still – even though I wouldn't take a tackle at 10, you could still justify it.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I think, you know, get one later or like sign a vet now or draft one later is the approach I would take. But if you go out and you get, I mean, I should probably stop mentioning Cam Fleming at this point, because as I said, he's a capable veteran who's got starting experience and played for Nate Hackett in Denver. Like if they haven't already gone out and gotten him, clearly Nate Hackett doesn't like him.
Or he doesn't like Nate Hackett.
That's probably the more likely of the two, actually. I can't believe I didn't think of that. yeah, but, you know, Donovan Smith is a guy who, you know, he's not a great player, but he was literally just a starter for the Super Bowl champions. I think if you were a starter for the Super Bowl champions, you're good enough to be a backup for the Jets.
Absolutely. And
he said he wants to be here. So there are three or four options out there. There are many options at safety. I think if you add a safety and a tackle pre-draft, you're good. But right before we wrap up, though, something's got to happen with JFM, whether it's an extension or a cut. I want an extension. Get his cap number down to $4 million this year and add a couple years on to his deal and pay him at the back end. Do the same with DJ Reed. I messaged you guys this a couple weeks ago when there really wasn't a pressing need, but then they go get Hassan Reddick. And now you have $1.4 million in cap space. You need $10 million for free agent. You need $10 million for your draft class. And then if you are going to look to add a tackle or a safety, you got to make – to me, those are the very obvious moves. Extend Reddick, extend JFM, extend DJ Reed, bring their 2024 numbers way down, and you've created $30 million in cap space.
Yeah, I think those are the obvious extension candidates, and you know, obviously Hassan Reddick is the newest one, and he said that he's going to let his agent handle it. I was kind of hoping that they would already have it handled before he came to New York, but that's neither here nor there. If they aren't able to get that done, I still think JFM and DJ Reed would open up double digit millions, so yeah, 10 to 12 million.
They're due $30 million between the two of them.
Yeah, and then I think you could restructure like a Quinnen Williams to open up a couple more million, and then you can afford your draft class, like you said, and a potential David Bakhtiari, Quandre Diggs, Justin Simmons. Yeah, one of those names. And then you feel a little bit better. And I'm glad that Emery said it, that the Jets don't have that many holes.
No, go ahead. But I'm gonna add to that. Go ahead.
And that they can be more flexible due to filling all those holes. But yes, there's at least two or three spots that are pretty vital still where they need a solid depth player. And I would put running back in that category as well.
Yeah. I think what Emery said, and you mentioning it, I feel like I'm starting to feel now more than ever. I'm more cautious because I'm less confident in the coaching staff, but it's starting to feel the way it did last year, where it's like, you have the talent to do some damage, and it's a matter of, again, the coaching has to come along, guys have to stay healthy. I get all that, but it's my exact thought process last year when I would hear people say, you know, when I would say this team is primed for a deep playoff run, possibly a Super Bowl, people would point at you got this guy, you got that guy, pointing at the deficiencies. There is no perfect roster.
No.
I mean, if you're to the point where you're saying, well, this team can't compete because they don't have enough at safety, is that really? Like, that's the biggest concern?
Yeah.
Because I remember a few years ago when you didn't have a quarterback, a running back, a receiver, a guard, a tackle, a safety. Like, you had nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's built up to the point where we're picking at it and saying, well, this team's not ready to compete because they need another tackle and they need a safety. Well, the draft is coming, and there's still some veterans out there.
Mm-hmm.
So those are addressable. Those could happen. Wilson wants to know, I think you may have messaged the wrong group there, Wilson. I'm not sure.
I was going to ignore that, but yeah, that was a little.
I hope everything's all right. Right. But yeah, I mean, I'm looking. It's like I said, it's only my lack of confidence in the staff and the lack of accountability for penalties and things like that that make me think, is this team, if Joe Douglas goes out and gets a veteran tackle who can, you know, gets a Bakhtiari or he gets a, you know, a Cam Flint, whoever, and then he adds a Justin Simmons and then adds some toys. Again, I'm banging the hell out of the Brock Bowers drum, but you think I won't be excited if it's Malik Nabers?
Right.
Watching the guy streak down the damn field and Aaron Rodgers loft up bombs, that would be awesome. So, like, there's a lot that can happen with just a couple of transactions. And if not for the staff, I'd be looking at it like, all right, this team is back again now to where they should be capable of a deep playoff run, but it's about health. And that's why they've got to do more at tackle, because as much as we love the Tyron Smith signing, you can't and they won't go in with just him. But I feel like you need another body there. But this is now, once again, whether people admit it, acknowledge it, this is once again a very talented team.
Yep. And it goes back to the conversation we had, and we can wrap, but the conversation we had right in the beginning where high floor players, the only way that this pick is probably a non-stud is if the player busts. Like, there's nothing really, like, if it's an offensive tackle, it's probably going to be a good one. A wide receiver, it's probably going to be a good one. Even if it's the fourth one off the board at their positions, like, the chance of the player being bad is more so up to the player being a bust, more so than the Jets just making a bad selection, in my opinion. But that's what they've built up to throughout this whole offseason.
Selecting a bust would be bad, but I get what you're saying, though. I get what you mean. It's the way you worded it, but I see what you're saying.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so we'll see. We're that much closer. Another day closer to the draft. I'm going to log off, and I can't even remember which game I'm watching right now. I think Penn State and getting another look at some of their linemen. Fashan, who I've watched a bunch of course, by now. But you got Norzad, the center. You know, again, you don't know where the Jets – he's played guard. He's played center. And Caden Wallace, who I messaged you guys. I feel like him on the right side, I feel like – there's a few tackles. Like, you look at Oklahoma, Penn State, and Notre Dame, all three have tackles who are getting a ton of press. And I feel like in each situation, the guy playing the other tackle spot, whether it's Fisher or, you know, Caden Wallace, like these guys played at a really high level. And I think they'll be sort of mid-late round picks who can play. But that'll do it for this one. Thanks for tuning in. Went a little bit long, but I'm excited because the draft season's here. Yep. Like here. Like, I can't believe it's 3 weeks away. Here.
Yeah. So, every time Emery comes on, it's like draft season's right around the corner. It gets so exciting.
Yeah. I got, I'm off work the next couple of days. So I'm going to be watching nothing but film for the foreseeable future. And we will have more later in the week. I'll probably pop on and talk some draft later in the week. And then we'll be back next Wednesday, possibly Thursday. We got to work that out. I might be out of the country for a day, but we'll see. Either way, we'll be back next week with more. Thanks for tuning in. Have a good one, Jets fans. So close.